Senator Al Franken announced his resignation today on the Senate floor. Many of Franken's Democratic colleagues called on him to step down yesterday after allegations that he groped several women over the years. He'll officially step down in the coming weeks. Franken's resignation comes at a time when allegations of sexual assault and harassment are definitely in the public eye. In the political sphere, Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore has been accused of pursuing young teenage girls while he was a district attorney in the 1970s. And long-serving Michigan Democratic Representative John Conyers retired earlier this week, facing allegations mostly from former staff members. The list keeps growing, leading people to ask who's next and how does this affect the political landscape. Susan Johnson is an associate professor of political science and the director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research at UW-Whitewater. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, I want to start with a listen to some of the freshest news here. Senator Franken's speech on the Senate floor announcing his resignation.
Today, I am announcing that in the coming weeks, I will be resigning as a member of the United States Senate. I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls campaigns for the Senate with the full support of his party.
Susan, there's a lot there. Let's start with the basic fact. Senator Franken is resigning. What are your thoughts on this decision?
Well, I think that he was left little choice yesterday when there was word of an additional claim, as well as the fact that several United States senators, members of his own party, female senators in particular, came out and indicated that he should resign, as well as Chuck Schumer, who's the Democratic minority leader. So at that point, I think that the only option Al Franken had was to announce his resignation.
And in the totality of his speech, he was not apologetic, particularly for his behavior. He denied some of the accounts and said he remembered some things differently. And as we heard there, he pointed at Republicans Donald Trump and Roy Moore. What did you make of the content of his farewell address there?
Well, I recognize the irony, but it was wholly inappropriate in my mind for him to include that in his statement. And I think we've seen that not only from Al Franken, but from others in the media and in other areas who have been forced to resign as a result of sexual harassment and sexual assault allegations, that oftentimes the resignation or statement that is made is a non-apology or a non-recognition of what in fact happened. So I don't know why he began that way, but I sort of cringed when I heard that.
I want to dig into some other particular cases in just a bit, but big picture, people are talking about, hey, maybe we're at a turning point here. The standards of behavior, the culture of harassment is going to change. But people have talked about that after the Anita Hill story, when Clarence Thomas was nominated for the Supreme Court, after Senator Bob Packwood, Bill Clinton. A lot of people have thought we've been at a turning point before. Are we at a turning point now?
Well, I think it depends how you define turning point. I would argue that after the situation with Anita Hill and those hearings and the imagery of the panel questioning her being all of those older men, I mean, I can still see that in my mind, that led to the election of quite a few women, females, to Congress and other offices as a result. So was it a turning point then in the context of wholesale change? Obviously not, because we're seeing still a whole lot of sexual harassment and assault going on, but it did bring more women into the process. And I would argue that the more women you have in the process, the greater the force for equality and the greater that these issues will be raised. And so now we've seen this onslaught of people coming forward, and I can't remember a time where we've seen this much attention. This movement also being named Time's Person or Issue of the Year. So I guess it all depends how you define turning point.
Do you expect to see, are you already seeing a lot of women step up to run for office?
Well, actually, this is before all of this began, you know, a month or two ago when the cavalcade started with the cascade started with, you know, Harvey Weinstein and all of that. There were already record numbers of women who had announced for office. And so I think that this will just lead to more.
I want to start getting into some of the politics here. Democrats, Al Franken is out. John Conyers is out. There's another Democratic congressperson in Nevada who is being pressured to leave. And then Democrats are pointing to Republicans, looking at Blake Farenthold in Texas, Roy Moore, and they're pointing to Donald Trump himself as people who have accusations of sexual misconduct of various sorts. What do you make of the politics there?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question because, as you said, there's been several Democrats now who have stepped aside, and yet Roy Moore is still running and leading in the polls. And then there's the issue of, again, what the president has been accused of doing. And so, you know, I've heard different theories on this relative to what Democratic voters see as more important as opposed to Republican voters. The Republican Party seems to have come back around in support of Roy Moore, not in its entirety, but originally you had Mitch McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate, say he had no reason to not believe the women who were accusing Roy Moore, and then indicating that he should perhaps not, you know, continue on in the race. And now we see that his messaging has changed a bit, and we've got more Republicans who are coming around back to support him. So there's a clear difference. And I think that part of the reason, to talk raw politics, part of the reason why Al Franken was pushed out so strongly was because it's really hard to argue against Roy Moore, some people would say, if Al Franken remains in the Senate.
Susan Johnson is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science and Director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research at UW-Whitewater. She is with us to talk about sexual harassment allegations in politics and how it's impacting Congress. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Was it the right decision for Democrats to call on Senator Franken to resign and for him to resign? Are you glad he's stepping down, upset? And what are your thoughts on Roy Moore's campaign for the Senate in Alabama and various reactions from different wings of the Republican Party? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And if you're a woman who's worked in politics at any level, what do you make of the culture when you work there? Do you see a change happening? 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We continue our conversation now about sexual harassment and politics in the wake of Minnesota Senator Al Franken's announcement that he's going to resign from his position in the next few weeks. Susan Johnson is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Was Senator Franken right to step down? Were his Democratic colleagues right to ask him to? How about Roy Moore in Alabama and how national Republicans are changing their approach to him as he does better in the polls? Call in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll go to our callers. Carlton is with us in Green Bay. Carlton, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to make a comment on the Al Franken thing. This is the first time I've been able to call in and actually listening to your station. I love it.
Thanks.
But as far as Al Franken is concerned, I just think what he did today was so respectful. And I think he respected not only people in Minnesota, but also all of the United States. He believes that we should be at a higher standard. And I honestly believed him that I don't think that his intentions were out of ordinary, that he perhaps did really see things in a different view. But that doesn't change the fact that America's seen it different. And I just found what he did today, just whether he was coached or not, very, very respectful to America and his state.
Carlton, thanks for the call. And Senator Franken, Susan, had made the case that, well, he didn't really do anything wrong, but it's best for the people of Minnesota. The ethics investigation would make it hard for him to do his job as a senator. Carlton sees it as a respectful decision to Senator Franken's constituents.
Well, I think that when you make the decision to resign, particularly if, as Carlton mentioned, Senator Franken doesn't believe that what he did rose to the level or he saw things differently, then leaving at that point was the decision he needed to make and that he felt was important to make for the citizens of Minnesota, as he mentioned in his statement.
Carlton, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Martha in Menominee. Martha, hi.
Hey, how are things across the river there, folks? I love this show.
Thank you. What do you think?
I think Al kind of took one for the team here. He had to, in a way. And it's kind of a long-term strategy. I think Trump and Moore look worse in comparison than, you know, the reflection back on them looks worse. So I think he had to do it immediately, but long-term for the Democrats, too, I think he took one for the team. You know, in Minnesota, I used to live in the Twin Cities, and Franken's always kind of gone on the WWWD, what would Wellstone do, philosophy of politics there. And, you know, in light of that, it was a no-brainer.
Martha, thanks for the call. I want to give Susan Johnson a chance to react. Susan, Martha says Franken took one for the team.
Well, and I think that a lot of people perceive it that way. The Democratic governor, so the replacement that will be appointed, will be a Democrat, so there's not much loss there in terms of for the Democratic Party. They are losing a strong voice. But, I mean, I think that it's important to remember that there are several women who came forward and indicated that there was some inappropriate behavior, and I think we have to keep that in mind as well.
And one case I've seen made when it comes to politics and other spheres, too, is that people are starting to get the message that, hey, nobody's irreplaceable. Maybe Senator Franken, from the Democratic perspective, was a big name, a big fundraiser, but they can do without him, and people are expendable if they violate norms and harass or abuse women.
Yeah, I think that we're learning that as an outgrowth of all of this that's going on, and someone will step in and someone else will take a leadership role in the Senate that perhaps was something that Al Franken held previously. So, yeah, I would tend to agree.
Susan, there are reports that various news outlets are looking at numbers of people in Congress, maybe in the low double digits, looking at stories, reports of possible harassment. No names attached to that yet, so I don't want to speculate on who that might be. But what are you watching for as this story goes on in Congress?
Well, I'm watching to see what happens on the Republican side, because there's been, I would say, swifter action as far as with the Democrats, and there have been some, you know, issues that have come up with the Republicans, and we've not seen that. So I'm kind of curious about if any of those claims are on that side, what we'll see.
Susan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely.
That's Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science and the Director of the Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research at UW-Whitewater. She joined us today to talk about the latest news on sexual harassment and national politics, especially in Congress. As average temperatures in Wisconsin rise and heavy rains become more common, we're seeing more dangerous bacteria in the state's lakes and rivers. That can be a threat to fish and other species that live in the water and to humans. The federal government has spent billions of dollars to limit agricultural runoff that can lead to these bacterial blooms. I used to think of them as algae blooms. Turns out they're bacteria. Some experts worry that the effort isn't enough. Steve Carpenter is a professor emeritus and director emeritus at the Center for Limnology at UW-Madison. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to be here.
Well, first of all, can you talk about what toxic algae is and how dangerous it can be?
Well, the toxic algae that we have are species of cyanobacteria, so they're technically bacteria, not algae. We have about four kinds in the Madison Lakes that that can produce toxins, and the toxins are very, very deadly. They can cause severe liver or nervous damage at very low concentrations. Readers may be more familiar with them through paralytic shellfish poisoning, which is a hazardous disease from toxic algae on the coast of the United States. And the chemicals are very, very similar. So these are nothing to fool around with.
And are these cyanobacteria something that's always there but in a small quantity, but when things get out of whack, they kind of take over?
That's a fair way of thinking about it. Yeah, I suspect there are always small amounts around, but when you have very high phosphorus and warm water, they tend to become dominant.
And are we seeing more blooms of this toxic life form bacteria, I guess, lately in Wisconsin?
Yes, we are. Actually, it's a pattern that's going on worldwide due to warming of the planet and also due to high levels of phosphorus pollution in areas that have industrialized farming. We're in the Madison Lakes, you know, they've been an issue. They were first noticed in 1880 in Lake Mendota. And so, you know, they're a long-standing problem in the Madison Lakes, but we're certainly seeing a fair number of severe blooms every year.
And you're mentioning the Madison Lakes, and that's, I know, some of the most studied lakes in world history. Is this something we would see more of probably in other lakes around the state?
Oh, sure. In all of the agricultural areas of the state, I guess anywhere south of Highway 29, you could see them. Certainly southeast Wisconsin has a lot of algae blooms.
And let's get into the effects of this. If a person or an animal, a pet maybe, is exposed to the cyanobacteria, what are some of the things it can do to us?
It will kill you, and there are reports of pets being killed by cyanobacteria every year. I'm aware of at least one person in Wisconsin who was killed recently by them. There may be more because it's not necessarily something that's easy to recognize. The physician would have to know to test the stomach contents for the algae.
We're talking to Steve Carpenter, emeritus professor at the Center for Limnology at UW-Madison, looking at toxic algae, actually a kind of bacteria on the rise in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And Steve, let's dig into the causes now. You've mentioned a couple so far. First, let's focus on climate change and warmer water. Why does that create ideal conditions here for the stuff we don't want?
This kind of bacteria, the cyanobacteria, do especially well in warmer water. They're, you know, different species of things that live in the water have different preferred temperatures, and these guys prefer warm water. So as we have warmer summers and warmer lake water, they are likely to become more common.
And then you mentioned farm runoff as a big source of the phosphorus. Why is that so good for the cyanobacteria?
Well, they thrive under highly enriched conditions, conditions with high phosphorus availability in the lake. And if we didn't have the high phosphorus, the warming would not matter. The fact that we have high phosphorus supports the tremendous growth of algae, and then because it's warmer and conditions are so rich, we end up with the cyanobacteria.
And I should ask, what does this do apart from its effects on people and pets? What does this do to a lake ecosystem when we have these blooms?
Well, the bloom-forming algae are not particularly edible because they form big colonies. So the grazers, the native grazers, the small animals that live in the lake water, can't handle them very well. So they prefer to graze the smaller types of algae in the lake water. So it's not necessarily, it's usually not very good for transfer of energy up the food chain. The cyanobacteria are sort of a dead end in the food chain. Many aquatic organisms seem to be adapted to the toxins, and I'm not exactly sure how that works, and I think there should be more research on it, but they don't seem to suffer the toxic effects that we see in pets or farm animals or humans. Another side of these blooms is when they die and decompose, the decomposition in the warm water removes oxygen from the water very fast. And as the water deoxygenates, you can get fish kills. And we, you know, regularly throughout Wisconsin in summer see incidents of enclosed bays or small lakes where the oxygen went out of the whole bay or out of the whole lake, and the fish died.
Let's talk about solutions now. What kind of efforts are there on the runoff side of things, first of all, to try to keep that phosphorus from fertilizers from ending up in the waterways?
Well, there lots of things have been tried, and Wisconsin has actually been very innovative in trying to control this runoff, and we've had programs to control it for almost 40 years now in the state, and the most common practices try to slow down the movement of the phosphorus by putting in buffer strips or other types of vegetation to slow down the erosion and the movement of the phosphorus, and those are fine as long as the rainfall is not very heavy. But eventually, there's going to be a big storm, and those things are going to be overwhelmed. And we're increasingly finding that those practices are just not enough. Where we're headed is a need to prevent buildup of phosphorus in the soil and actually reduce buildup of phosphorus in the soil. And in order to do that, we're going to have to move toward a sort of sewage treatment for farm animals, basically, because the manure is a significant source of phosphorus, and we've just got too much of it. And we're as long as we're going to have the farm animals, we're going to have some way of reducing the amount of phosphorus that we put on the fields and that ultimately ends up in the surface water. And I think some sort of treatment is just like we use sewage treatment for human waste, so we're not dumping human waste into our surface waters. I think we're going to need to go the same direction with animal waste.
That sounds potentially expensive and difficult, since unlike, say, in a city, you might have a bunch of different farms over a widely dispersed area. It sounds like a lot of challenges there to do sewage treatment for animal manure.
Well, I agree. There will be a lot of challenges. The Dane County is experimenting with manure digesters, and those are located in an area where a handful of farms, four or five farms, can easily access the digester. We are moving toward larger and larger herd sizes, at least in dairy, and that makes it more cost-effective, potentially, to treat the waste from those large numbers of animals. But there's no doubt about it. We all love our cheese, we love our ice cream, we like to have milk on our cereal and so on, and we all love clean water, and we want to be able to go to the beach on the lake or go fishing or have those special experiences that Wisconsin people have on the water. And in order to have both of those, we're going to have to pay what it takes to produce the cheese and ice cream and milk in an environmentally safe way. And we've, you know, that's just the hard reality of how it's going to work.
You, a while back, participated in a project looking at four different future visions for the Dane County watershed in particular. As you look at this runoff problem, the cyanobacteria, if we stick with our status quo, don't do more to address this problem, what do you see in, say, 10, 15 years?
Well, if we don't do anything about the problem, it's just going to continue to get worse. So we will see more and more cyanobacterial blooms, and you know, it's simply going to be a deterioration of water quality in all of the agricultural areas of the state.
We'll leave it there, Steve. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Steve Carpenter is a professor emeritus and director emeritus of the Center for Limnology at UW-Madison. He was with us to talk about an increase in dangerous cyanobacterial blooms around Wisconsin and the world.